Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second edition of 2023 for the Tragic Rugby League Report. I'm your host tonight, Declan McCutcheon, and I'm joined, as per usual, by Zach Haig and James Rutkin. How did you guys find the first week of trials, boys?
I was just saying off mic that it was so good. I ended up watching way too many games. In addition to, like, I watched all the NRL trials and then plus the St. Helens game, and I watched the stream of the Bunnies Bulldogs SG ball game as well. I was like, this is too hungry. This is too much.
Hungry over eight.
Yeah, that's sort of what happened. I've been starving in the wilderness for 6 months of the off season.
We are getting like an extra game, aren't we, with the Dolphins? And it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, extra game with the Dolphins, and then plus St. Helens, you kind of end up getting a lot of extra footy that way. And the All Stars, of course, that was the other game I was forgetting. So there was a lot of footy to be watched. But I'm not complaining; it's better than
getting an extra game though, Declan, are we?
Well, because the Dolphins are there, so that is an extra game because they're playing.
No, because there's a bye.
It's just a bye. Yeah,
that's sorry. I said,
I just had to pull that up. So.
You're a dick. I'll get you back. But so Rockin, how did you find the weekend? Obviously, your man, Jermaine Spry, had a great.
Yeah. Very impressive for the Broncos to keep him without scoring a hat trick. Very impressive defensive effort there. It was really good to have the games back. I actually watched every single game except the Bunnies game because Zach usually covers us when we talk about the Bunnies. So I just tuned out completely for that one. But
yeah, all good.
it was good. It's very, very exciting. I think, like I say this every year, but I'm like, I think this is the season I'm the most pumped for. It's just the hype has been insane.
Yeah. No, it was a good weekend of footy, wasn't it? It didn't get off to a great start for me, but I think gradually it did get a little bit better. But obviously
the preseason challenge ladder came out at the end of the round and the Tigers still there at the bottom.
That is the silliest thing when you have like, is it offloads and tackle breaks that
that goes into it?
You score 5 tries, you get a bonus point as well, like as a team.
Oh God. Yeah, I just don't care enough about that, to be honest. And I don't know. What do you guys reckon?
I don't know if players do either. I don't think anyone cares.
No one does. I mean, no one really cares or is trying to actively try and win it, but I mean, like, it's better than nothing. Like, they're going to play the trials anyway. They might as well chuck something involved, put a bit of a
pride. The team that wins it, are they going to like hold up the trophy and have like big celebration? Like, are they going to be amped?
It'd be like the Nines, I reckon. Like, when you win the Nines, you get the little trophy and you have the photo with it, and then like that's kind of, everyone forgets about it after a week.
Yeah. All right. Do you reckon that if James O'Brien, if the Knights potentially like won this comp, but then they were terrible for the rest of the year, then you're like, well, I won the preseason comp. That can't be.
Well, Adam O'Brien was the one that didn't he say on 360, or Buzz said on 360, that O'Brien called him to ask whether or not he was under pressure to keep the spot. I swear I remember Buzz saying, like, yeah, Adam O'Brien called me to see what I was hearing about his job security.
Now, that is true. I remember that as well. Just being absolutely shocked, especially like Buzz of all people, like of all the journos, they're just like, I'll just call Buzz Rothfield because that's the one.
That's what we're missing now. We got the footy back with the trials, but we just, it won't be until the round 1 week where we finally get the great Buzz Rothfield and NRL 360 back on our screens every week. And I miss Buzz. I never thought I'd say this because I hated him for so long. But it's come full circle where the things he says to me are that ridiculous now. I find him funny and I kind of miss him.
No, but for me, it'll be when Paul Kent runs off the back fence for something. Probably the CBA negotiations, I reckon. That's when the season will
start
for me.
Yeah. He'll have a crack at someone. Might have a crack at Luttrell. Might have a crack at Luttrell fighting.
Oh, yeah. Very, very excited. Very excited. But so obviously we're kind of talking about it. We kind of touched on it a little bit. It's very hard to like dig in on like any particular solid point to watch from these games because it's a lot of young players in the first round of trials. So instead of going over through every single game, I thought that we would just ask the panelists about who we thought stood out individually. So I'll start with you, Rutkin. Who was your one or two guys that you thought really stood out in this week of trials?
I'm going to name some Titans players. Fair warning. I actually think Keanu Kinney, when he came on, was electric for us. I thought he was fantastic. And I was keeping a keen eye on Josiah Pahulu as well, the under-18s Australian captain. And I don't know if you guys caught that when the Broncos were trying to do that offload, that his read to like knock that into his foot and kick it back to the Titans was incredible. He was pretty solid outside of that, but that one play right there got me so excited for him.
Kinney, I remember messaging you during the game and I was like, who is this number 19? Like this Kinney guy, like who is this? I'd never really been across him, but I was like, holy shit, he's got something.
He's in our top 30. We signed him like towards the back end of last year, and with him came a just one highlight of him scoring this one really sick try. I think for Burley or something. He's in our development system. He's junior Titan.
All right.
He scored this one really cool try, and I was like, okay, yeah, one try, you know, like let's see what's going to happen. But he was doing well, and his leg speed was insane.
Predominantly a fullback, you were saying?
Yeah, a fullback, which further to kind of states to me that you guys might be right in that Jaden Campbell might be moving on if we sort of invest in him over the next few years to replace Brimson eventually. But, yeah, I was a real big fan of him.
Mm. Yeah, what's it called? AJ, not AJ. What's the Campbell playing center as well? What do you think of that?
I don't love him playing at center. I think it was a matter of just not really knowing where to put him. Well, he's going to be playing 14 for us, I'm assuming, and I'm really interested to see where they put him defensively on the field. So I think they were trying to test him because, from a technique perspective, he's a good defender, but it's just so small. So I don't really know what they're going to do. I mean, he got a try assist, but yeah, he didn't really get much ball and get busy though. Like he had like 165 run meters, two line break assists and stuff, but it wasn't anything eye catching.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Zach? I'm going to assume that you're going to lessen Bunnies players here.
I actually wasn't going to until Ruckin brought out his Titans. I'll hold off. I'll give you what my standout bunny at the end. But there's a couple of names I want to run by, and one that I actually did find quite interesting. He was a recent addition to his team, and it's Daniel Atkinson, the fullback for the Sharks against the Knights there. And we spoke about it, I think last week on the show when they let Lachie Miller go, and then almost the same day, Cade Dykes did his ACL, and then we're all of a sudden thinking like, oh gosh, who's gonna be the backup? Like if Kennedy goes down, who plays fullback? It's gonna maybe have to be Connor Tracy or someone like that. But they picked up Daniel Atkinson from the Sunshine Coast Falcons, and I think he played for Italy in the World Cup, a bit of a utility player, and they used him at fullback, and I thought he was outstanding for them. So, may not have been the best player of the round. He was certainly one of the top performers in that game, but I think more just the fact that like it may have answered a bit of a question around that Sharks squad, because they have so much depth in pretty much every position except for that one. And he sort of, I think that one might actually have some consequences throughout the season. But yeah, he was one that caught my eye. I was also really, really impressed with Luke Metcalf for the Warriors playing six there. I've long said, I don't know how he didn't get a run at Cronulla last year. I think it was mainly because he'd already signed to go to the Warriors, but man, he'd be in my starting 13. Like if I had my way, I'd put him at fullback and put Chance in the centers. But they've got to find a way to get him inside because he was electric, I thought. And if you want me to give you a Bunnies player, I pointed him out last week and I was very impressed with him during the game. I thought Talis Duncan was probably our best through the middle there. I thought he was really strong.
Yeah, that was a really good game. My one would be the Melbourne Storm fullback who played against the Roosters, Philavili Fa'alago. And I actually remember going to Leichhardt Oval when he played SG Ball for the Storm back, and I think it was 2021, and you could just tell he had those dancing feet, and he'd be a really, really good player. And he's actually from Melbourne as well, which I think is pretty cool. Like he has a local, he's not being pitched from another system. So I thought he was amazing. You know, you could tell if Papenhuyzen for some reason misses a period of time with this injury, like I reckon he'll do a really good job at fullback for them. So he was really impressive for me.
Do you think because I think the Melbourne have announced that Pap is going to miss the first 6 to 8 rounds. And I think the general assumption, and rightly so, like naturally you'd assume, oh, well, Nick Meaney is probably going to take that spot. Do you think that performance, I'm not sure if he's in the top 30 because he's quite young, but would you be tempted to throw Farlongo in there? Because he probably does have a bit more upside than Meany. But obviously, Meany's been there. He's done the job before. Would you be tempted to pull the trigger early, or would you sort of go the cautious approach there?
I would be really tempted because I'm just not sure where else you could see him pop up at the Storm. Like, I know he could probably play wing, but you know he's probably not like big enough at the NRL level to play wing. Like, I feel like his skill set is at fullback, if you know what I mean. Like, what do you reckon?
I'd be tempted to. I think he may only be on a development contract. I could be wrong, but if there's a spot there, I'd be certainly get him in the top 30. Because look, he might not be ready to go in round one, but look, with Papp's injury history, and hopefully when he comes back, he's sweet and he strings some games together. But I think having an option there, maybe later in the year when he gets a bit more time, maybe some games in cup against men, and he gets himself a little bit more physically prepared. I think longer term, he's certainly showing some signs that he could be a real player of the future for them. So I'd be getting him into the top 30 if he's not already in there at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was he was really good. But yeah, obviously,
Fano too, Declan. I thought he looked really good for you.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to say anything because we got pumped. So, you know, I'm not really going to, you know.
He was the positive sign for the Tigers. Like, seeing how well he played, and sort of similar to that 2021 form, the back end of that year, I think that's a very good sign for you guys.
Yeah, I love the when he like just pumped Freddie Lussick and then gave him the face pump when he was in on the ground. Thought that was great. But yeah, he's
speaking of Lussick, I saw in Manly on Friday, I saw a lot of the St. Helens players because apparently they base themselves in the Northern Beaches. So I actually saw Joey Lussick and Connie Hurrell down at Manly Beach.
Yeah, did you say, you go up to them, say hi?
I didn't say hi. Connie is a very big man, and I'm sure he seems like the friendliest dude of all time, so he probably would have liked it, but I thought, no, I'll let him go. He might try to me if he wants to, so I let him enjoy his time at the beach.
Yeah, just before we move on, what do you reckon about Jack Wellsby? Like, he played, like, not against like an NRL team, because the Dragons, they weren't really full strength, but there's been a lot of talk that he's might be able to transition to the NRL. Well, do you see it, like, personally, or what's your take on him?
I do. I like him. He really impressed me in the World Cup, and he did again against the Dragons. I thought he was probably St. Helens' biggest standout for me, other than Alex Wormsley, actually. I forgot to mention him. He was sensational. He's in his 30s now, but there was a lot of talk a few years ago about Wormsley with a lot of interest in the NRL, and he ended up staying at St. Helens. Jeez, I wish he came over because I thought he was fantastic. But Wellsby was really good. He's still only 21 as well, I'm pretty sure. So he's got a lot of upside there. And I think if guys, particularly backs and like key position players, like a fullback like Wellsby is at a come over to the NRL, the earlier you can get them into a system here, the better. Like you've seen the improvement of Dom Young over the last couple of years from when he first started. So I think he's already a quality player, and if you can get him over here ASAP and get him in a good system, I think he's got a lot of untapped potential as well. But just the way he moves, he pops up around the ball. He's got that instinctive ability to just sort of pop up in the right places. And he was, a threat all night. So I think he's a real shot of making it in the top grade for sure.
Yeah, so now let's move on. So last week we did the bottom four. We kind of predicted where we thought the bottom four from last year would go this season. And now we're going to move on to the top half of the bottom eight. So if your team finished bottom four last year, had the misfortune of placing that low, go back to last week's episode where we kind of predicted where your team's going to finish. But boys, I thought we'd start off with a team that kind of got a lot of raps for their trial performance against the Raiders, the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs. They finished last season, missed out in the eight, but they did have like a bit of a renaissance toward the end of the year. Zach, what are your kind of initial thoughts about the Bulldogs going into 2023?
Well, first of all, I'd probably just say I'm not reading too much into that trial. They had a lot more sort of first grade quality guys out there against Canberra, like week one of finals. I don't think you can read much into that. I know a lot of doggies are getting excited about it, but not reading a lot into that. Having said that, though, I certainly think that their side is better than it was last year. I think namely the fact that they've got a settled halves combination now with Burton and Flanagan, which is where they sort of looked their best last year, is a win, because they obviously chopped and changed a bit there with Avarillo in there and Wakeham and those sorts of guys. So I think that's good. There's a bit more stability And obviously Reid Marnie and Vili Kikau are huge inclusions, not to mention Cameron Serraldo, new coach. So there's a lot to be excited about with the Bulldogs. I still have a few question marks over a few key areas in their team. Namely, I know I already touched on Flanagan and the fact that there's stability there is a good thing, but still not 100% convinced that he's a seven that could take them to finals footy. I mean, he did it at the Roosters, but he probably had a lot more talent around him, respectfully, in that spine with Tedesco and Kiri and those sorts of guys. And also fullback. It's looking like Hayes Perham is getting the job there. I thought he had some nice moments for the Maori All-Stars in that position, but I'm not completely convinced there. So I think obviously some star power there. Marnie's a big get. And obviously the emergence of a couple of outside backs will be interesting. I thought Karaz made a good fist of it last year, and I'm very keen to see Paul Alamotti go around because it looks like he's won the left center spot. But yeah, I think exciting times, but I think it's still a work in progress for the Dogs. I think there's still a little bit there to be sorted out. Obviously, Stephen Crichton is probably coming to play fullback there in 2024. So obviously they've already identified that. But if we're talking 2023 specifically with Perham there, not fully convinced. But yeah, I mean, they're an interesting and intriguing team to watch. And I thought Reid Marnie in the first trial showed some really encouraging signs. It's almost like he can take a little bit more ownership of this team. Whereas at Parramatta, it was certainly the sort of Moses and Brown show a little bit. So keen to see how he goes. But yeah, they'll be an interesting watch, but I'm not fully convinced I'm not buying into all the Doggies hype just yet.
What do you reckon? I've noticed that on the socials, you seem to be a bit on the Bulldogs. Do you reckon that'll be for this year or is it more for 2024?
Definitely 2024. I think they'll be solid and hard to beat. Again, like I think that this season is going to be so close. I reckon all the way down to like 14th, 15th, it's going to be a difference of like two or three games who's making the eight. But their squad on paper is very, very promising. I think this year they'll improve upon last year with their big signings. And I'm keen to see Serraldo as a coach. I'm really, really keen to see how that looks throughout the year. But I have a feeling they're going to be improved.
Where do you have them finishing?
Where do I have them finishing? I have them finishing 10th.
Oh, 10th. Yeah, so kind of about, so they finished, was it 12th last year? So kind of the same, you reckon, from them.
In terms of, it is difficult because I think all teams are going to improve. So they might not necessarily improve drastically on the ladder, but I think I think they'll be 10th. I think I can imagine with a few key injuries, them sort of just missing out. But if they get a good run with injuries, I think their draw is pretty easy. I think they've got one of the easier draws in the comp. I don't think they're going to squeeze in just this year.
What do you reckon, Zach? Where have you got them finishing?
Very similar, and I agree with your point there, Rakan, about with so many teams improving and being really active in the market. I definitely think they'll improve, but maybe not necessarily a lot on the ladder. Got them in at 11th, so pretty similar. Obviously, you've got to factor in as well an extra team, so it's 11th of 17 as opposed to 12th of 16. So there is some improvement there, but I haven't got them in the 8 this year. Like I said, I'm still not convinced on their spine. I think they had a little bit more depth in the forwards than I gave them credit for. Looking at guys like Jacob Preston on the weekend, Franklin Pele was very, very impressive as well. Obviously, Ryan Sutton's there now, Andrew Davey. So certainly a lot of depth there in and around the forward pack. And, you know, a couple of outside backs that'll be interesting watches, like Jarrell Skelton, Braden Burns probably won't get a run in the top 17. So it's a decent squad, but I don't have them playing finals footy. So, yeah, 11th for me.
Yeah, I think we've all got them kind of finishing that kind of mid table. I've got them at 12th just purely because, yeah, as you kind of brought up, the Meadows is a bit of a, like, obviously Kyle Flanagan at 7 is a question mark. I'm not a huge fan of Hayes Perham at fullback either. I thought he kind of showed that he's got a few holes in his game in the All-Stars match. But
he's got the ball playing ability.
Yeah, I 100% agree. He definitely seems like an outside back to me. But like, if someone like Franklin Pele, if he can like, you know, bust onto the scene in first grade, I think that's probably a big question mark answer for me, which could move them up the ladder for me. But for now, I'm going to keep them at 12th. And so that'll be really interesting. I'm very, as Rakan kind of mentioned, Cameron Swarrell's first year as head coach, being very highly touted. It's going to be interesting to see how they go. towards the end of the season.
He's an interesting one, Pelé, isn't he? Because he's had so much talent for so long, and just for whatever reason, he hasn't been able to, you know, like, I don't know if the numbers mean anything, but just whenever you see him, a guy named number 30 in the first trial, it sort of says, geez, he might be a little bit down on the pecking order, but then he, you know, he came off the bench, did really well. But I just feel like, I don't know, I don't think he's going to be in their first 17. Mm-hmm. He's named in the extended bench for the first trial, and guys like, you know, Ryan Sutton, Corey Waddell seem to have the jump on him at the minute. So interesting, though. Like, obviously, there's something holding him back, because if we're just talking talent and impact he could have off the bench, the sky's the limit. But he could be an interesting one if he grabs that spot at some point and just plays maybe 20 off the bench. It would add another dimension for them potentially. And it is also looking like Josh Reynolds might win that 14 spot too, because I think New Brown might be injured. He's not named for this trial, and Reynolds has been named at the 14 spot there. So interesting watch for him.
Yeah, I think apparently he always kind of had that kind of around him at the Sharks, didn't he? Because like on talent, he probably could have nabbed a bench spot, especially when Fifita went down, but they just never really gave him the opportunity. So yeah, 100% agree. There's something about him. Maybe like his defense, they're a bit worried about, because he has a really big dude. Maybe he can't move as well as he needs to at the moment, which is why they went for someone more like Ryan Sutton, who's more mobile. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. All right, boys, moving on to the team that I think is probably the biggest swing team in the competition. Like, they could honestly finish like well inside the eight, but then they could finish in the bottom four as well, just depending on one key injury. And that's the Manly Warringah Eagles. Well, what do you reckon, Zach? Where do you reckon their fate lies in 2023?
I think you hit the nail on the head. it's so dependent on how Tommy Turbo goes. But it's not just that for me. I mean, there's a lot of other factors that could either work out really, really well for them or could be a bit of a train wreck, namely Josh Schuster at six. We were hearing a lot of good things about how he's going in the off season there, and you know he's lost all this weight and he's looking nice and fit, and that's great as well. But you know, is he a six? Is he, you know, he was barely getting minutes in the back row last year. I think there was probably, I would imagine, assuming a fitness issue, but he was certainly out of favor. So interesting to see how he goes. But yeah, I mean, they could finish fourth or 14th and neither of them would overly shock me. I sort of have just, because I can't really pick it, I've kind of put him somewhere in the middle. A couple of concerns for me, like even if Turbo stays fit, still a couple of concerns for me with Manly. Number one, the obvious one, Anthony Seibold. I mean, obviously his last stint as an NRL head coach didn't end the best. He sort of went out in a blaze of glory with the wooden spoon at the Broncos. He reckons he's learned a lot from it. And obviously his one season with us at the Bunnies went quite well. He took us from, I think, 12th to top four. But having said that, he had a very, very good squad there with guys like Greg Inglis and Sam Burgess and Cody Walker and Adam Reynolds and all these guys. So a little bit different scenario here. He does have some talent to work with, but I'm also just a bit worried about their depth, particularly in the middle there. Obviously, Adam Fanua-Blake left, and more recently, Marty Tapau this year. And all of a sudden, you're sort of left with guys like your Pasekas and your Kepis and Toff Sipleys and those sort of guys that are sort of walk-up starts to the 17. And I don't think any of them have really established themselves as a cornerstone of a forward pack. Obviously, you still have Jake there, but I think they really need one of those guys to step up and nail down that starting role and really go up to another level. But then the flip side of that is if one of those guys get injured, I'm not seeing a lot of depth there. I think like Ben Condon and a couple of younger guys, Sam Finu, Josh Aloyer, you know, he has the ability. I'm just a bit worried about their depth in and around the forward pack there, and even just their first choice pack around, particularly around their middles. I think that they might get found out a little bit. But yeah, depth an issue for me, just considering how top heavy their roster is with like Turbo, Cherry Evans, Jay Turbo on big coin, you would imagine. So yeah, interesting. But if Turbo stays fit, they could do anything.
Yeah, because I think they do need more impact forwards, because Rotkin, it's so interesting, because if you look at the team, they've got Daly Cherry Evans, who's, you know, the incumbent halfback for the Maroons. So he's like obviously going to be a really good player. They've got Tom Trbojevic, who's on his day is the best player like in the game potentially. And then Josh Schuster, he's so like talented, and then they've got like, they've got so much going for them, but at the same time, that, like as Zach said, like really well, they've got like a lot of question marks in their squad. What do you reckon lies in store for the Sea Eagles this season?
It is probably one of the toughest teams to find, like get a read on, because they could just come out and just be that team that's like, oh, look, they're a top four team. Everyone goes, of course they are. Like, you know, of course they are. And then if they're bad, everyone goes, of course they are. You know, it's one of those really difficult teams to get a read on. I'm leaning towards them struggling this year. I'm not sure if they, I don't know if they've gotten over all the problems that they had last year. It feels like there was a lot of disconnect between the squad. I'm not sure if they've gotten over that. I can't imagine that just being resolved in a simple offseason and bringing in a new coach who's shown that he's not great at dealing with drama. I don't think Manly are out of that yet. I sense that there's a few players that really don't like each other along there, and, you know, the captaincy sort of stuff. When it comes to talent, they're obviously right up there. But, you know, if a key hamstring injury happens and, you know, coach butts heads with the spine, namely like Schuster, and if he's sort of being stubborn about the way he's playing, I can really see them having another rough year. But it's the team that I'm the most confident could leave me with egg on my face.
Yeah, I reckon, I'll say this, I think even if Turbo stays fit, a lot of people sort of draw that sort of comparison to like, oh, well, in 2021, when Turbo stayed fit, they were a top four team. I don't think that they can, even if he stays fit, I don't have them getting back to that level. There's a few reasons for that. I think the competition in 21, if you remember, attacking-wise and just for those strong two, it was just a crazy gap between the top and the bottom, and the games were so open and there were so many points being scored. I think that really lent themselves to what Manly were doing. I think the game's changed and it doesn't really lend itself to that, you know, the side that they've got there and to what they're able to do in 21. But also, like I mentioned, I just don't think the pack is as strong as it was. So, even if everything goes right for them, I don't think they're a top four side anymore like they were a couple of years ago. But could they sneak into the eight? Yeah, sure, maybe, if things go well for them. But I'm sort of in agreement there, and I'm not convinced that it's going to be a great year for them.
Where do you have them finishing, Zach?
Got them at 10th. So similar to this year, but I've got them slightly up. It was a bit of a toss-up, you know, them and the Dogs. I had it a very similar sort of, I think they're going to be around the same mark. I've got them above them, in and around the eight, but just missing out. So I'll lock them in at 10th.
Yeah, I have them at 9th as well. So I'm going to assume, Rutkin, you have them a little bit lower based on your...
I have them 15th.
50th.
Wow!
Mm.
Is that 15th because you're thinking Turbo won't last a season, or even if he does, you still think 15th?
To be honest, I have a feeling, my gut is telling me that he'll like have a few injuries. I don't think he's going to have a season ending one, but I just think there's too much drama there and they haven't shown that they're able to deal with it. And the media often picks their key teams to sort of pick on, and that's been Manly recently, and they've shown they can't at all handle it.
You made a really good point about Seabolt too. I don't think he necessarily handled the blowtorch from a media perspective or a drama perspective at the Broncos, or even like with the Bunnies, when the rumours around him signing with the Broncos were really loud, and he'd quite often sort of be a little bit hostile in press conferences, and he'd snap back. And I think you're right. It's an interesting fit that they've gone with him, considering the situation the club is in at the moment.
Definitely. You can so imagine them having a few rough games at the beginning of the season and things coming out being like, you know, Seabold already under pressure, and then that's sort of him going into defense mode and the locker room being awful. Yeah, I could just, it's just the feeling that I get.
Even like, because Manly, you always hear like, you got to have a Manly person coaching Manly. That's like the age-old thing of like, you got Dez and Tuvi. And then you remember the issues that he had with like the Broncos old boys, because it's a little bit similar in the sense that it's a very sort of, almost a traditional club in that sense. It's going to be quite how he is as an outsider with those similar sort of pressures that may come if they don't perform straight away. It's a very intriguing watch, I think, for this year.
Yeah, and he's already kind of fallen out with it. Was it Peter Peters, the Manly journo, that he's kind of like had a war of words with a little bit over the Trbojevic injury? So it's interesting because you can kind of already see the tension in the cracks there, can't you? Because for me, Seabold, he doesn't really seem like someone who's very like open. Like, he doesn't really, as you kind of said, doesn't really handle criticism very well. You can tell he kind of shuts off and, you know, doesn't really articulate himself very well under pressure, to the media at least anyway. We don't really know what he's like behind doors. And it definitely felt like that was like one of the big reasons why his time at the Broncos got cut short.
It's either going to go one of two ways in that those same problems pop up again, or you could only hope from a Manly perspective that he's sort of learnt from those and developed in that area, because he has been in similar positions before. But yeah, I'm not too convinced.
Because like the Broncos had some sort of crazy record where they just could not win in Sydney for, it felt like a season or two, didn't it? Like,
they couldn't win many places for a while there.
Yeah, but oh my god. But yeah, it's gonna be really interesting. I'm very excited, especially to see the Hallow Sports boys if they don't go too well, because it's just a little like guilty pleasure of mine just to watch them after a Manly loss. So very excited. Yeah, that.
That's always funny.
Yeah. So all right, moving on to the last two, 10th and 9th. Now I think these two are gonna be very, very interesting to talk about, because the two coaches are like under a lot of pressure. But we'll start with the St. George Illawarra Dragons. This one's very, very interesting. It feels like they've had the off-season from hell. A lot of like suspensions, like no fault stand down policies, injuries for the 5-8 position. Like, boys, I'll start with you, Zach. What are your thoughts of the Dragons for this year?
Going to go straight into it and work my way backwards. Spoon. They are getting the spoon. I am willing to declare it early that they are my pick. Got them at 17th, and I'll tell you why. Number one, I think where the club's at the moment, I'm sensing just from a morale sort of culture perspective, some worrying signs there. A couple of your brightest young players reportedly, like Sloan and I think Sullivan both, again, reportedly, they may have confirmed, I'm not sure, but asking for their releases, hugely concerning. Doesn't sound to me like, you know, and if that's anything to go by, that Anthony Griffin is necessarily the most popular coach there. I don't, obviously, I'm not inside the four walls. I don't know, but the rumblings may suggest that he may not be the best fit. And then you look at something like the fact that three players turned up to their end of season awards night last year. All these signs point into unrest at the club, people asking for releases, coach under pressure. It's all just very worrying. And even just their squad, to me, like as soon as I see them play, even last year and in the trial against St. Helens, and I just see their team on paper, the first thing I think of is just kind of bland, tired, stale. Like, you know, you look at what they, obviously Ben Hunt, they finished 10th last year, and Ben Hunt had the best season of his career. He had an 11 out of 10 year, very unlucky not to win the Dally M. If he goes back to even having an 8 out of 10 year, which is still great, imagine where that leaves the Dragons. And then you factor in again, Cody Ramsey, very unfortunate for him. Hope he's going to be okay, but he's going to be missing for the whole season. Amone stood down. Sullivan's back, which is interesting, but they've still named Moses Mbai at 6, which is very... not a surprise for, you know, from what we've seen Anthony Griffin's selection policy seemingly be in recent years. And then I even like the big concern for me, you know, like I guess you could, another one, their biggest signing, Jacob Little at 9, they lose McCulloch, they get Jacob Little. They had Reece Robson and Cam McInnes in their building a couple of years ago. They're both gone. They end up with Jacob Little. It's just, I don't know, respectfully to him, like maybe you'll have a bounce back year for his sake. I hope he does, but not a lot of depth in that position. And if they use Bud Sullivan as a forward, as a 9 again, coming off the bench, it's just all over the shop. And their forward pack, it just lacks, for me, it just lacks impact. Like it lacks any sort of dynamic, you know, tackle breakers, offloaders, anyone to generate momentum. You look at, you know, Blake Laurie's, I love Blake Laurie. He's such a solid player, has the biggest crack every week. I don't know if he's, you know, a guy that's going to really get them going, you know, generate something for them. Aaron Woods, again, same sort of boat. Josh Kerr, all, you know, serviceable NRL players, but who's the guy in that forward pack that's really going to spark them? I've got real concerns over the Dragons this year, and I haven't been high on them for a couple of years, and they always just seem to manage to just grind their way into enough wins. So they're, you know, 10th. They're only a couple of wins out of the 8 last year, but you know, it's sort of easy to forget. You watch them play. It's just a very uninspiring brand of footy, I guess. You know, the positives for them, you know, Sloan at fullback will be interesting. I love their centers. Sully and Lomax could be anything on their day.
Fiona, you hear that Lomax has switched sides?
I did hear that. And again, I don't really know why, because I feel like he's a specialist right-hand ball carry with that flick. I don't get that. I don't get that. I thought that the, you know, Moses Sully was one of the shining lights for him last year. Why would you move him? I don't know. I just think some positives there, particularly around the outside backs, but, you know, I've gone on enough of a rant. Sorry, Dragons fans, but I've got to call it like I see it, and I've got them last.
I think you forgot to mention Beg Zaid Musgrove as well. He's in the building, so, you know, that's going to be a
a soft spot for Big Zane making a debut as a mighty Rabbitoh, but geez, again, like, is he going to really move the needle for them? Is he providing anything to that forward pack? Maybe a bit of aggression, you know. If you can get the best out of him, he could have a bit more more in his game than someone like an Aaron Woods. I don't know, but it's, yeah, I'm concerned. Am I being too harsh? Someone jump in. Am I being too harsh?
What do you reckon, Ruckman? Is that being too harsh?
No, I don't think he's being too harsh. Who was it in the Dragons that said that the team didn't like each other much last year, but this year they're all going out to get brekkie together? Who was that?
I think it was Josh Kerr.
Yeah,
so like people used to race off after training because it was at Wollongong and a lot of boys lived back in Sydney, and it's like now we hang out a bit more. And it's like, oh, this is all not sounding very promising, is it?
Love it. Look, yeah, I think they're going to be rubbish this year. Really unsure as to why Aaron Woods is kind of the only player that still plays that, like, goes into the media and shits on other players that are still playing. Have you guys noticed that? He seems to love that, Aaron Woods. It's really funny.
I love it as well.
I think he's really good on Triple M.
Yeah, no, he is. It's just sort of funny because he's not, like, necessarily a great player himself now. Yeah. And off-season from hell, they're going to have to look forward to those brekkies, get a bit of extra hash browns with the Eggs Benedict, because the season's not going to be too good. It's going to be a rough one. And yeah,
they lose talk the first about 10, that. Do you reckon the brekkies come to a halt?
We talk about the, like, what would happen to the Seagulls with Turbo getting injured. Like, imagine if Ben Hunt goes down, like, at all, this team would be disastrous.
Oh, no.
Zach, is this the second time you predicted them to come last?
Yeah. I like I said, I've been every year I've gone into a season thinking like they're in big trouble, but they always just find a way to win enough games that they're in and around that, like on the like on the tier. Periphery of the eight.
They need to come last so they can actually go, okay, we've got a problem now. Like, it's like they're almost in denial and going, no, we're close to being good. Like, we were so close, but they need to come bottom last, bottom 17th, to be like, yeah, wow, we really need like a big overhaul here.
They've just started. Like, I feel like they're the most compelling case, like on paper for me. That's why I put them at last. But then if that doesn't happen and they just grind out a couple of wins here and there, then I won't be surprised. They could come 10th again for sure, but it wouldn't change my opinion on where they're at.
Yeah, definitely.
I've also struggled to recruit as well. Do you guys reckon? Like, they're never really linked to anyone.
I don't think it's... Yeah, their never.
Caps in a mess. I think their cap's in a real mess. From what I've heard, they don't have a lot of room to play with.
Who's on lots of money?
So, it'd be Hunt. I heard the Bellin is on quite a bit of coin as well. Apparently, they had the most people... I don't know why I'm quoting this on the Daily Telegraph's Rich 100 list. And obviously, like, the journals are pretty much guessing wages for that. But apparently, you know, they do have a lot of high players on them. And they also have, like, Lomax and Sully on, like, big contracts as well. And they're centers, which is never, like, good for your cap, I reckon.
It's not. But Denon Kemp was saying on Bloke and a Bar a little bit ago that he was talking to Dave Riccio, put that list together, and he reckons that, like, it's a fair assumption to assume that the majority of those are pretty accurate. Like, there's a lot of research that went into it, like player managers, recruitment managers and stuff. So apparently that list, if you may not be 100% accurate, obviously, but, like, it's not far off the mark. Really? But the other thing is, like, I'm pretty sure someone was M-Buy on that list. I think they might have some guys that are being subsidized by the clubs, because they do love that sort of like bargain buy, another club chipping in. Like, they've had so many of those guys over the last couple of years. Like, I mentioned M-Buy. I think even Jack Bird coming from Brisbane, man, that same situation as well. But
Josh McGuire, he was another one.
Oh, yeah, he's gone now. But yeah, that was a similar situation too. So, yeah.
I think I actually watched Moneyball not that long ago, and like everyone kind of talked about that. But the whole part of Moneyball is the fact that like these guys are like provide value that's not being like appreciated by other teams. But the Dragons just signed players that are struggling at other teams. They're just going like under the radar. That wasn't what was happening. And it's just so
I'm glad you said that, because buying guys that are subsidized by other clubs that used to be big names that are on big contracts is not the Moneyball approach. Not what happens in the movie. Great.
But yeah, I agree. I think they're in a bit of trouble. What do you think?
I have them for the spoon as well, I reckon. Not because of like the pure talent of the squad, but yeah, as like we kind of talked about, I see a lot of like red flags like within the culture of the team. Like obviously, as you said, the awards night thing, the Josh Kerr comments about the coach, about how they weren't listening to him. And plus, like you never really see a coach like turn around in the last, like in the third year. You know what I mean? Like it's very rare. And plus, they have a stack of injuries as well.
Kerr did say in that interview, didn't he? Something about like, yeah, we weren't really buying in, but now we are. Or something.
And now we
like
are,
that.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing, but that was very alarming.
Yeah.
That was like, the first interview. That's when he also said that they'll go and get Brecky.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just have a lot of red flags. So, Rutkin, are you the same? Are you tapping a spoon for the Dragons?
No, well, I've already got Warriors at the spoon. I've got Dragons coming 16th.
Okay. Yeah, so not great.
I will point out that I, in December, chucked a little bit of cash, gamble responsibly, on the Dragons to get the spoon at $12. Plenty of value there if we have any punters out there listening. I don't know if they're still $12, but if they are, that's my value bet of the year.
Okay. Well, unlucky for the big red V there. Looks like they're going to be in for a bad season. Boys, like for the last one, I'm very excited, and I thought I'd throw it to this person's biggest admirer of the podcast. So we're talking about the Brisbane Broncos and how they're going to go this season. And as we all know, James Rutkin is the biggest admirer of Kevin Walters. So how do you reckon your boy's going to go this season, Rutkin?
Look, I actually think the Broncos, I was high on them. I thought they were going to be really good, and then they had probably the second most off-field drama aside from the Dragons this season, I would say, in the off-season. The Saul and Cobber comments, obviously. By the way, credit to Kevin Walters, his cheeky little dig saying like, oh, he must have a good coach after his good game. I did rate that. Was funny.
I love that.
I did find it interesting that the Broncos re-signed him and then fined Sulan for his comments. It was like they had to decide whether or not they were keeping him before they find Sulan. That was an interesting order. Now, everyone obviously knows I don't think he's a good coach. And I don't think the Broncos are ever going to actually win with him as a coach. He seems very out of his the situation seems too big for his feet at the moment. The situation's too big for him.
But
I think for Broncos this season, it was a smart move for them to back him. Because it's pretty much saying to the playing group, who I'm sure there's a lot of them that don't want him as a coach, to say, we're backing him. How long do they sign him for? 2027?
Well, here's the thing. I would jump in on that and the fact that they backed him. What I've read, obviously unconfirmed, but reportedly the extension comes with a clause in and around that if they get rid of him, there's no payout or a capped payout of some sort. So it seems like they're taking away the risk on their side, and they've put this clause in there. If it's true, that says to me that they're maybe not super confident. Like it's good for them. I mean, they've locked him in, there's stability there, and then there's just not a lot of downside if they want to go in a different direction later. But it is a little bit like, well, how much faith do they really have in him?
Hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if that's true, that's not looking great for Kevin.
Did you say that as well, Declan?
Yeah, I saw it because I messaged the group chat saying, like, oh, it's so strange that it was just during the All-Star game, wasn't it? Or just before. That, you know, that he was going to get that 2-year extension. And he's signed these kind of non-guaranteed contracts for a while, hasn't he? Like 1 year. Now it's less than 2 years. And it seems like there's a lot of safety net for the Broncos, and which is fair enough because, you know, they might still be paying Seabold or, you know,
burned by that situation, definitely.
They definitely got burned by that situation. So it's going to be really interesting. But the rumors that, like, the players just don't rate him, it's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, look, he's an idiot, and they're like them missing the 8 last year. I don't know if that was much to do with him. They clearly can get good results out of these players from the other coaches that are there. for me personally, the Broncos this season relies on how healthy Walsh stays, how much he can connect with Adam Reynolds. I mean, how smooth that looks, because Walsh looked very, very good in the trial against the Titans on the weekend, and outside of some of their actual dangerous weapons of second rowers, that could be very dangerous if he is able to stay healthy. Yeah, I think the Broncos, I think this is the year they crack the eight. I think if not, they have to get rid of Walters. But you also, like, it would be very unlikely for them to fire him the same season that they extend him. So that would be quite weird.
Yeah. And we also kind of talked about who else would, like, pop up that could, like, obviously, as Zach said before, they get, like, a lot of applicants because it's a great squad, great facilities, great resources. But in terms of, like, someone who you think would fit really well, there's not really anyone that comes to mind right now. So maybe that's why they extended him as well, because there's no, like, clear replacement. But Zach, Reece Walsh did look really good, didn't he, against the Titans? I mean, I think, like, he kind of struggled with the Warriors because they were not a great team last season, all due respect, and he's a smaller player, so it's very limited what he can do. But when he was given time and space, he just looked electric for them. And then, like, you combine that with when Adam Reynolds comes back, you know, he's going to get even more space. So how do you reckon they're going to go?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about swing teams when we discussed Manly earlier. I actually think Brisbane could be one of those as well, because, you know, you just look at last season in itself as a bit of a microcosm of that as an example. Yeah, they were top four up until about round 19. I know I've spoken at nauseam about it and everyone's spoken about it, but they were a top four side. And then the last 6 or 7 weeks, they just fell into a heap. And within the space of less than 2 months, they miss out on the eight. So I think, and that's not a talent thing. I think they proved that they have the talent and their squad is really, really strong, that they can be, you know, as good of a caliber as a top four team. The problem is whatever issues they have, there's now two players that have publicly made some comments about Kevy, although Gamble's not there anymore, granted. And then, you know, we see these, you know, the rumblings of him and Benny Eichen not getting, I'm just saying that there seems to be from an outside looking in, a little bit of instability there and some issues that may be brewing away. And then when you connect the dots and see if such a stark collapse that they had from the first three quarters of the year compared to that last quarter, and like I say, it's not a talent thing. They still have the guys there to do the job. It makes you think, is there something deeper going on there? And if so, if that is true, has that been resolved? And if it has, then I think Brisbane are in for a great year, because I think, like I say, their squad is fantastic. But if not, then whatever was the root cause of what happened at the back end of last year may rear its head again. And that's my biggest concern with Brisbane is that finish to the year and just the rumblings that we've heard over the offseason. Having said that, though, if you look at it from a purely football perspective and their squad on paper, it's fantastic. Like I say, we touched on how good they were earlier in the year. Top four, like we mentioned, but now you add Walsh to that at the back when they were really sort of rotating through guys like Tessie New and Tamari Martin. With respect to those guys, they're not Reece Walsh. They're not in that caliber. So you get him. You also factor in, I'm expecting a big year from Ezra Mann. Looks like he's put on a bit of size. I thought he had a really strong debut year, but you give him another offseason, some experience under his belt. I think he's in for a great year. Reynolds still there, obviously. Great forward pack with Carrigan and Haas and those sorts of guys. And their outside backs are arguably the best in the competition with, you know, Cobbo and Staggs and Farnworth and Corey Oates. It's a big year for Staggs, carrying shoulder injury last year after Origin. But I feel like every year we go into the season and we think, oh, this is it. This is going to be the year for Staggs. Like last year, it was, he's got Reynolds on his edge now. This is going to be the year for Staggs. And it just hasn't really quite exploded. We're only seeing it in glimpses. So I'd be keen to watch how he goes. Biggest issue on field wise for me when you're looking at their side is their nine. Not really convinced on either Billy Walters or Corey Pakes. I like to look at Tyson Smoothie in the trials, and he was the Q-Cup Hooker of the Year last year. But he's not in the top 30, I don't think. So not sure where he sits. And obviously Blake Moser, Queensland 19's hooker last year. They've signed him long-term, I believe. A lot of raps on him. He's in the extended squad for this week's trial. So he might be the guy to come up out of the ground after a certain amount of time in Cup just to get his, get himself ready. If he can fill that gap and really come on like they think he might, that's a big bonus for them. But yeah, a little bit worried about their hooking stocks. But no, other than that, I think there is no reason why the Broncos should not be playing finals footy this year with the squad they've got.
Mm. So where are you tapping to finish that?
Got him eighth. I think they're going to sneak in. Not convinced on their consistency to have them any higher than that. But I think just with the team they've got, it's too good of a side with Walsh there now. And the guys that are already in that squad, they have to play finals this year. So I'll put them in at eighth.
What about you, Rutkin?
I have them seventh. It's actually crazy that they're not just a lock for the eight. You know, like it's crazy that they're not being talked. Like the squad on paper is top four. I've got them seventh.
What do you reckon, Declan? What's your read on the Broncos?
I was a little bit not too keen on them before I saw, as we talked about before, Reece Walsh coming in. And I think he's just going to add like a lot in attack. And then I just feel like someone like Paddy Carrigan as well, such a great player. Payne Haas, you know, he's so consistent as well. They've got a great forward pack. It's just the hooking spot that's kind of an issue at the moment. But I'm going to back them to make the eight. And I think they have some like ridiculous, like 10 out of their 11 first games are in Queensland.
Yeah.
So they have a really good start to the season. They've got some tough competition. I think they start with Penrith at the first part. So I think they're going to have like a really good start to the season. And then I think they'll right the wrongs from last season and make the eight. So I've got them finishing eighth as well. So we've all got them kind of in a similar spot.
We've touched on a couple of coaches that may be under some pressure, Anthony Griffin and Kevy Walters. Who do we think? And I hate saying this because I know it's people's livelihoods, but we've got to speculate here. Who's the first axe to fall? Who do you think's the first coach gone?
Griffin, for sure.
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you guys.
Yeah. Does he see out the season?
No way.
This would have to be the first season that no coach gets fired for that to happen.
Yeah. What about I was going to say, Rutkin, you mentioned Kevy. If the Broncos miss the eight, you think that it might be time up for him, considering the squad they have. Do you agree with that, Declan?
Yeah, I would say so, because you know there's no excuses. Like when he first took over, there was still that kind of layover period from Seabold, and they had a lot of holes, especially in defense. But I think that it's so funny because like they played so well last season at the start, and he got a lot of credit for that. But then it kind of like self-combusted, which kind of like made a lot of people walk back their coaches. He was a great coach, but I think with a team like Brisbane, they have expectations to play finals footy, and if you're not there with that squad, then I think that they probably will move him on, to be honest.
Interesting.
Yes. But I think that will do it for this week. Is there anything else you guys want to bring up before we head off?
I was going to say week two of trials. Is there anything catching your eye? Anyone that you're keen to watch? Any teams now that a lot of the sort of first graders are coming back in? Week two is obviously probably a bit better of a gauge. Anything that you're keen to look at?
I'm very keen to see how Jackson Hastings and Kaelin Ponga go in the halves together. I think that's going to be obviously make or break for the for the Knights, and also Adam O'Brien. And they've got a pretty tough competition in the Eels as well. So that's going to be a good game, I reckon, to start off the weekend with.
That will be an interesting watch. I've got a tip for you, boys. We've come in largely full strength, a few middles missing, but one guy to keep an eye on for the Mighty Rabbitohs is Isaac Thompson on the right wing. Made his debut, played two games last year, but there's a spot open on that right wing. Tane Milne suspended, and no one really nailed it down last year. Jackson Paul and Josh Mansour have moved on. I've heard he's had a huge preseason, big year in Cup last year. I think he could be a guy to really jump out of the ground. So keep an eye on Isaac Thompson in the Charity Shield.
What about you, Rutkin? Anyone to put in the black books for the Titans?
We've made an interesting choice that I'm really happy with. Jimmy Jolliffe has been moved to starting prop with Mo off the bench, which I think will suit us a bit more. It's really important to have strike coming off the bench these days. And I think Jimmy Jolliffe would really suit the sort of grind of an early game, and then have a bit more of an explosive runner in Fotowaker come on. So I actually really like that choice. And I'm keen to see how our bench looks with Jaden Campbell coming on and Aaron Clark and Stimson as well, who I thought actually was really good. I'd never noticed Stimson before he signed with us, but I was really impressed with him on the weekend. So, keen to see our bench in action.
Do we give
St. Helens any chance in the World Cup challenge?
They're going to get slogged. It's going to be really hot as well in Penrith. Can you imagine those guys from the north of England playing in the heat? And yeah, it's going to be ugly.
Even Crichton playing fullback as well. Good little glimpse into the future for the Doggies fans, perhaps.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Is Dylan Edwards injured or they just rested him?
I think he's either carrying a niggle or not quite. Yeah, there's a couple of guys that I think are not completely ready to go.
Yeah, because Liam Martin's not playing either, so...
Liam Martin's not playing. I think Sonny Luke is out as well. He's not playing, which is interesting.
You guys reckon St. Helens will be able to score?
I think they'll score, yeah. Preseason, first game for a lot of the Penrith guys, so I reckon they'll be a bit rusty, but it's a huge ask, isn't it, for them. But I really do appreciate St. Helens coming out here and having a fair crack, because a lot of the time the Super League team have come down for one game, kind of gets their ass handed to them. But it seems like St. Helens have made a conscious effort to come down and play the Dragons to start with, get acclimatized and really go for it, because they've won Super League, was it 4 times in a row? So this is kind of the last thing that team kind of needs to do to cement themselves as a team to remember, I reckon. So I reckon they'll be up for it, but it's a big ask, isn't it?
I think it's cool they're doing the whole preseason challenge, because like you said, they're in the Super League. They've won. They've been so successful. And they are giving it a real crack. They're taking it seriously. And I think I was listening to James Roby, and he was saying it's not just about necessarily winning the silverware for them, but it's sort of they're almost a representative for rugby league in England, and sort of maybe getting rid of a bit of that stigma in and around the Super League. It's an extremely tough ask, but you're going to give it a crack. And James Roby, I think I touched on it last week. He's played almost 500 Super League games, won a million comps. He's the Cameron Smith of the Super League, really. He's had such an amazing career, still going around now and a quality player. So I'm happy that he never got that stint in the NRL, but I'm happy that he's at least playing NRL teams, and we can actually have probably a little bit past his prime, respectfully. He's at the back end of his career now. He's played so much footy, but I'm keen to at least...
520 games.
It's crazy. No one talks about it because, obviously it's a Super League player, and I get that it's a little bit different to the NRL and that sort of thing, but he's a legend of the game at any comp. So I'm excited.
Cameron Smith is the Australian James Roby.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. No, but he speaks really well. I'm very keen to see him play, and I'm happy he's get to watch him while he's over here.
And he doesn't look a day over 50 as well, which is really impressive considering. So
yeah, he might look a few days over 50 when he's got big Moses Leota and James Fisher Harris running at him in the middle.
Yep.
On Saturday.
That's gonna be very scary. And I think that's gonna be it for us this weekend. This week, sorry. Obviously next week we're gonna cover the bottom half of the top 8 from last season, and then obviously go over some interesting points for the trials this week. But boys, thanks for joining me tonight.
Thank you, mate. Looking forward to another big weekend.
Definitely, it's a pleasure, mate.
No, thanks. Thanks, Rockin. Anytime I get to look into your eyes when you eat a burger while we record a podcast is just my privilege.
The only thing that can top it if you're in the bath.
Yeah.
Excited for the bath pod next week. That's going to be good.
Watching Jermaine Spry highlights.
The one highlight. How good.
Would you do that? Would you do a bloke in the bar style thing where you just look at Jermaine Spry?
I'll do it.
Reaction.
Yeah.
Give me 4 weeks and I'll be able to do an hour long review on his performance. It's going to be good. You guys wait and see.
Right. Playing this week? Is he playing the Titans?
Yeah, he's coming off the bench. He's coming. They have unlimited interchange this week, don't they?
Yeah.
Playing. He's playing.
Play I've got a...
I've got. I'm going to put a money on any time try scorer Tremaine Spry. It's going to happen. Scoring right. Those Tremaine Spry's.
And he's 10 minutes stint off of it.
We're all going to be so excited when he scores a try this season. It's going to we're going to go off. It's going to be good. It's going to be a good year. Okay. All right. Up the Titans.
Go the Bunnies.
Up the Tigers.